Well, hi, welcome to the Lava Magazine podcast. I'm honored to have as our guest today, three-time Hawaii Ironman World Champion, and that just begins to describe the career of Marinda Carfrae. Good evening, Marinda. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks. Just got back to Boulder after a weekend away in Texas watching Tim race, and visiting Deloitte University, so... it's good to be back home again.
Yeah, and you know, the news that hit the social media airwaves just late last month, but the two of you are expecting a first addition to the family, isn't that right?
Exactly. Yeah, we're really really excited for this next chapter in our lives, and I'm almost 22 weeks now, so another 18 weeks to go, but. It's definitely been a very different year after 15 years of basically, you know, living, breathing triathlon and really nothing else. It's kind of a nice change to our lives for the moment anyway. Yeah.
Sure. And that's great. Well, on behalf of the triathlon world, congratulations. It's exciting for both of you. And, It's got to be a different, definitely a shifting of gears in a lot of ways. And I thought it would be kind of nice to chat with you about, when we talk with someone like yourself, we often are talking about how your training's going and how your race plans are unfolding. And obviously, like you sort of indicated, this is a bit of a different year. But one of the things that I think it's really compelling to me is that to do well, whether you're an age grouper or a professional triathlete, or a champion professional triathlete, like both you and Tim, there's the training part, and there's the nutrition part. We talk about that a lot, but there's also the overall lifestyle thing. And I've had this discussion with coaches from Mark Allen to Dave Scott to Brett Sutton about how important it is to kind of. And do things like manage stress to achieve optimal performance. And I'm just kind of wondering, like, you know, you're someone who, when you're at peak training volumes, you're probably putting in 30 plus hours per week. How do you think about it? When I bring up this word lifestyle, like, how do you think about it? How do you frame it in terms of importance?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's highly important to us to have pretty good balance. Early on in my career, when I first started doing triathlon, I obviously came from a basketball background, so completely different world. And then coming into triathlon, swept up in the Australian junior program and the AIS, and sort of was exposed to sports nutrition and sports psychology and all those sorts of things, but also exposed to some of the top juniors in the country right away and sort of learning sort of do's and don'ts, learning from them on what mistakes they were making, seeing athletes burn out, going too crazy with, only salad diets and getting really skinny and really fast, but then a year or two later burning out and just pushing so hard. And, I kind of recognized early on in my career also that, I was going to more likely be a long course athlete than a short course athlete, and knowing that the best in the world were in their mid-30s and at early 20s, realizing that, in order to race at my peak, I needed to be loving the sport in 10 more years and obviously making the small progressions along the way. So early on, I sort of realized that, okay, well, in order to enjoy this sport, in order to love it, I can't be 100% all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, if I want to win a race in 2 years, then... and retire, then that's a different story. But I wanted to have a lifestyle out of the sport. I enjoy swimming, cycling, running. I enjoy the people I get to meet along the way, and the journey that I've had has been nothing short of spectacular. But that's something that I really, really took to heart early, and not only just the nutrition part, making sure that if my body wanted a burger, or if I wanted to go out and have a drink with friends, I was going to do that. Obviously, I wasn't going to do that the night before a big race or before a really hard training session, but I wanted to keep triathlon and racing in perspective, and really just enjoy the whole journey. And that goes to nutrition. It also goes to scheduling my year out. It took me a few more years to realize that I couldn't just train, you know, every day year in, year out. And I needed to make sure I split the year up, especially, you know, being Australian. And in the early days, we would go and race the summer series and the short course super sprint stuff in Australia through January, February, March. So you'd have to be really fit for that. And then you'd go into the international series through the mid part of the year. And then if you wanted to race long course, then, you know, June, July, August, September, you'd race here in the US. So it kind of, I could see how it would very quickly get dangerous to just continually be in top form all year long. So I realized around 06 that, you know, I needed to set my year up around whatever race was the most important to me, and take breaks in the year. Taking 5 days off or taking 7 days off in the middle of a season is a good thing. It's good for you mentally. It's good for you physically. And yeah, we started doing that. Take a week off in May after, you know, a couple of early season races and a good off season of training, and then hit the mid season races, another couple of months of really hard training and good racing, and then take another break. And obviously in the last part 8 years, it's been all about Kona. So always taking a break in sort of around July. And when I say taking a break, I mean, I'm not doing anything. I take five to 7 days completely off. I go on holidays up in the mountains, or usually it'd be after a race. So wherever I'm at a race venue, whether it be in a Vineman, go and spend some time in wine country drinking wine and doing anything but triathlon. It's really helped me become the athlete. Will get to this point and still be enjoying the sport and still be successful at the sport. So,
yeah. You know, that's the thing. Like, you're not just, like, there's obviously a lot of different reasons why someone's a triathlete. For some, it's just, you know, the satisfaction of finishing a distance, and, you know, you can get away with not that much training, and you can probably, still push the limits on staying at the bar too late and go out and finish a triathlon. But the more you go up in terms of what your goals are, be it an age group or professional, the more I imagine, you know, well, sacrifice is a word, but you have to, the danger of getting stale and losing your desire to do it in the first place has got to be a factor. Yeah. And those breaks, you actually could find that you would come back recharged. And you wouldn't lose lose fitness, which I guess is the thing that a lot of triathletes might fear, is if they lose all the stuff they worked for, but they don't.
Yeah, I mean, you certainly feel like you're going to after 2 or 3 days off lose everything, but honestly, you can only gain from it. And the hunger, I think, is the most important thing. Having that hunger, having that willingness to get up and go out there and work, you know, that 1% or 0.5% harder and do those extra little things. Staying fresh mentally is so important. When you're in this sport, it's tough, and you don't want to go and train every day, but I think if you can give yourselves just those little breaks, and even like knowing that, you know, in a month's time I'm having a week off and I'm going to go do something really fun, and you know, knowing that that's in your future, and not that, okay, I've got 6 months of training and it's just training every single day and getting ready for whatever race is coming up. Yeah, I think it's really important to have, just some balance and just to step back and, have some perspective on what you're doing.
And one area that that I've become really interested in the last couple of years, and oddly enough, it started with a conversation at a nutrition conference with a former Navy SEAL. Oh, so, you know, I'm putting all these together. He was formerly in the United States Navy, and he became a medical doctor, and he's become a national, you could probably say international expert on sleep, and his name is Dr. Kirk Parsley. And ironically enough, his wife is Australian. So I just, you know, oddly enough, but it's so funny.
It's a good combination.
I know, apparently so. And at the time, coincidentally enough, we had just had our first baby, and so we were going through the sleep deprivation aspects of that. And I was at his talk, and I'm standing there, and everything he was saying, I was like, it was computing for me, and it's become such a large topic now in terms of, you know, I'm not exactly sure what it's like in Australia, but surely you've seen it here in the United States, that there's kind of this badge of honor thing that a lot of people in business, for example, I only slept 5 hours a night and still I'm achieving all this and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But we're finally beginning to understand that there is a tremendous cost in that. And that's mm-hmm. for the average citizen. And now when we talk about an athlete, I think we've known for a while that it's important for professional athletes to go get a lot of sleep. But he was talking about things like sleep hygiene and if you aren't getting consistent good sleep, the drawbacks, the impact it will have on your hormonal regulation, your overall health, mm-hmm. and surely your athletic performance. And I found that both you and Tim are pretty dialed into this subject. And I wonder if you could just talk me through that, whether it was maybe a conversation with Siri or how did that that pillar of your health and fitness lifestyle kind of come to the place it is now?
Yeah, no, I think I've just always been a really good sleeper. And, you know, once I became professional in triathlon, I didn't have to go to university or go to work, and I had the time to actually take naps in the daytime and make sure I was getting enough sleep in a 24-hour period, I noticed my performance and my the ability to back up sessions, or even from the morning to the afternoon, if I was able to get home and take a nap between sessions, that I was able to get better quality sessions out in the afternoon, even if I'd had a decent session in the morning. So, yeah, I mean, I've just always loved my sleep, and because I see the benefit immediately. Yeah, and I mean, Tim's not as good a sleeper as I am, but yeah, I mean, I just try to make sure I get, you know, 9 to 10 hours in a 24-hour cycle, and that may be, you know, 7 at night and 2 in the daytime, or, you know, it might be, you know, 10 in at night overnight. And if, you know, I'm training super hard, then sometimes I need 11 hours or 12 hours. Quite rarely do I need that many hours. Generally, it's around 9 or 10. But yeah, just recognizing that you're working hard, and knowing that how well you can recover, and that's the best way to recover, is to have quality sleep whenever you can. You can, Normatec boots are fantastic, nutrition's fantastic. You know, these all the things we're doing on a regular basis to try and recover quickly, because, you know, mm-hmm. the best athlete on the course is the one that's been able to put in the most training and consistent training and the most quality sessions. And the better you can recover, the better you can train. And, you know, in 6 months, in a few years' time, you start to definitely see those benefits. And it's just kind of always the way I've approached training. And
How do you monitor your recovery through technology, or has that become kind of like your own intuitive sense? Like you've been racing at a high level since 2002 mm-hmm. or so you obviously know yourself pretty well. But do you use is there any sort of technology that you use to gauge whether you're recovering or not, like a pulse oximeter or something like that, or is it more just like you being tuned into yourself?
Yeah, we just started. I just received a pulse oximeter actually a couple of months ago, but I didn't see the point in using it when I wasn't really training, since I just felt pregnant around that time. So I haven't really messed around too much with, you know, the technology. I mean, as you said, you've been doing the sport for a long time. I know my body, and I kind of, you know, can tell. Early on, it was more, you know, my first coach would always say, take your resting heart rate every morning. And, mm-hmm, as simple as that, you know, and if it was 10 beats above, you know, your normal resting, or you're resting at, under no fatigue, then, you know, maybe you're at risk of overtraining or, falling sick or whatever. So, dialing back training just off of that number. And that's sort of what I used early on. But then you kind of just know what it feels like pretty quickly when you wake up in the morning and get out of bed. And I'm not really big on all of the technology gadgets. There's so many out there. I think sometimes it can be paralysis by analysis. But there's definitely some great tools out there. And if you aren't sure, and you know, as I said, I've been doing it for a long time, so I kind of know when, you know, the days that you need to back off and the days that you can continue to push. There are some gadgets out there that can help.
When you're doing too much. I think you make a pretty good point there. I think part of it for some of us, and I think I fall into this category, is sometimes these bells and whistles are just kind of fun on their own. Like, it's another way to, oh gosh, I got a 9 out of 10.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure totally. That's good or bad, but
they can definitely be entertaining, and they're fun gadgets to use from time to time. And I don't know. I try to keep it as simple as possible. It's just swim, bike, run. And I think that sometimes you can get a little bit ahead of yourself once you start looking at all the numbers. And that's why I hire my coach, to look at, you know, the power numbers, and and she can do that analysis for me, so I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, but I have to ask, because I'm pretty curious about this, but because I wrote a piece that's in the current issue of Lava that's on the new REST technology, and as I sort of mentioned in the story, you're quoted as saying it's your secret weapon, and I haven't tried it. I haven't even seen it. I know that it's at expos, and when we talk about gadgets, it's an investment like a bicycle, but I imagine, I don't know, from what I understand about it, the two sort of primary values there are that for a triathlete is that circulation can be increased in areas, like, let's say you had a hard swim set and your upper body's particularly tired, your shoulders, et cetera, that you can kind of like program it toward that, towards actually getting more circulation. And also, you know more about it than I do, but if you move around, it will actually kind of adapt to the positions, and so you have an optimal sort of spinal alignment. I'm just wondering if there's what's that like? What do you actually think about it? I'm absolutely curious.
So I started sleeping on the rest bed about only received it about a month before Kona last year, so maybe 2 months before, because I think I was here in Boulder before we headed out to Kona, so I didn't have much time before my last race. Basically you can program it manually, so you can set the firmness or softness at each level, sort of like a sleep number, or you can have it on automatic, and the automatic setting will adjust as you move in the night. So if you roll over, then it will change. It will recognize that you're on your side, and it will change. For example, your shoulder area would need to be softer when you're on your side, so that it's not. Then you can hopefully get more circulation around your shoulders. So yeah, as you move to your side, it will recognize that, and you know, your hip and your shoulder will be softer, and you can customize that as well. So the side position, you can customize how soft you want it in those areas, and or how firm you want it in other areas. And yeah, it will just change as you move. You don't have to do about anything. You know, think about it. You just go to bed, and it moves with you in the night. Especially if you toss and turn a lot, it definitely will adjust as you move. I generally put it on the manual setting and just have it at every level. I mean, there's a manual setting that's also side and back, and it's basically, it will go to that setting on the back, and it won't move at all unless you move to your side. Whereas the automatic one, like any subtle movement while you're on your back, it'll slightly adjust as well. So it's pretty cool. You can definitely really customizable and caters to what you like, to what comfort, your own comfort. So yeah, I really like that it has, you know, the ability to do that, and pretty cool that they're bringing that kind of
that's pretty amazing
technology. into anyone's home.
I interviewed one of the founders of the company, and he's a triathlete, and it sort of makes sense within this, to use sort of the buzz phrase, optimizing a sleep hygiene thing. And I thought it was interesting to find out that, I'd mentioned Dr. Kirk Parsley talks about this, but the whole, these little things, especially in the age of digital technology where, if people who do have trouble sleeping, if they're on their smartphone right before they go to bed, well, they don't really understand that they're activating the cortisol system in their body through the light of the phone and other things like, I think as I understand it, you guys know enough to like, let's an hour before bedtime, we don't talk about training anymore. We don't talk about what the next race is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you need to switch off, watch something mindless maybe on TV.
Right.
And then, go hop into bed.
Well, along those lines, one thing I did notice with the announcement of your first baby, there's no announcements of any retirement. So I think that's good for triathlon fans. So there's that prospect. Years ago, I remember when Karen Smyers had her first baby and she came back and better fitness than ever.
Yeah.
So there might be some sort of upswing from that. But so you plan on resuming your racing after at an appropriate point, and so we'll continue to see Merinda Carfrae on the starting line and on the podiums, I take it.
I hope so. I hope so on the podiums, definitely on the starting lines. Tim and I, we've always known we wanted to have a family and we wanted to have kids. And initially, when we first got together, I always thought that, I'd finish out my triathlon career and then we'd start a family and I would just focus on that. But, at 35 years of age, I'm still enjoying racing. I still think I have a number of really good years left in me. I think I can be really competitive in Kona. I think I can win the title again. But the body clock is ticking. And I, knowing that we do want to have a family, I didn't want to wait too much later because, as you know, risk factors go up from 35. I just was like, well, it's not worth risking. I've had a fantastic career. I want to continue it. But it just made sense to take a year out now and try to start a family. And, it still gives me, hopefully, I feel like I could race probably three more chances in Kona at the top level. And that's not to say that, after that I'll be done. But, we might try for a second child after that. But, we just didn't want to wait and risk having complications trying to fall pregnant. And fortunately for us, we were able to fall pregnant really quickly. So, a baby's due in August, and that will give me 14 months before 2018's Kona. So it should be plenty of time to get moving again and get back in the game. But and also, it's kind of been a really good break for me. I've been, 8 years of, my whole life just being about Kona, and 15 plus years of being in the sport and just focusing on triathlon day in, day out. So I think I feel like it's going to be a great little break for me and give me renewed energy. Not that I was petering out. I was still loving the racing. I was still loving the competition and the challenge of it all. But, I think it's sometimes nice to step back and, take a moment. I've also never been injured in my whole career, so I've never really had any forced time away from the sport. So I think it's going to be a good thing. We're over the moon, obviously excited about, meeting the new little one.
And, this is one of those controversial areas, but, I think we all pretty much know that, the expectant mother, it's good to exercise and obviously eat healthy and things like that, but also not overdo it. Are you shifting gears entirely, or are you still getting out and swimming, biking, running? Or are you doing things like yoga and hiking and whatever? How are you kind of spending this time in that regard?
Yeah, well, this first half of the pregnancy, I've still been getting out and swimming and, you know, still running. I hope to be able to run through the whole pregnancy because I just really enjoy it. Cycling, I'm dialing back a little bit, mostly because I don't want to be on the roads because it's not only my life we're talking about now. It's
right.
It's I'm carrying another life, so I don't really want to risk being out on the roads amongst traffic. If I do ride, I'll ride on dirt roads or do a spin class. But honestly, I'm trying to keep it really relaxed. Kind of take every day as it comes. Some days I feel pretty ordinary and I don't really feel like doing whole lot at all. And then other days I have a good amount of energy and I'll go out for an hour 15 run and might go swimming. So yeah, I've been kind of I'm exercising. I'm not training for anything, which is a nice change. And I think as I progress, I'd like to, you know, maybe do a yoga class. I've never done one in my life. And I think that's good for pregnancy as well.
And you've never been injured. Also, you've never been injured. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so something in that. I think there's some stretching is not the answer.
I think it was because you were climbing trees and doing karate with your brothers growing up. I really do.
Totally. Yes, I think so too, yeah.
Well, and my last question for you tonight is... I just wonder, like, is your little boy or little girl going to be speaking with an Australian accent or an American accent?
You know, I think it's going to be speaking with an American accent. We spend so much time over here in the U.S. and you know, we just built a house here in Boulder. Moved in about 8 months ago now, so I feel like it's. The baby's going to be going to school here in the U.S., but you never know. We'll definitely be heading back to Australia every year, and I speak the way I speak. I'm not going to change that. So yeah. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see, but I feel like it's probably going to have more an American accent than Australian.
The funny thing for
us. At least early on.
I'm from the Midwest. I'm from Iowa, and my wife is from Boston, and so we've moved back to Boston, so we're here now, and so my little three-year-old, every once in a while, I'm like, oh my God, he's got a Boston accent. So, which is kind of cool.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, Tim's family are all from Boston too. So.
Oh, is that right? I knew.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
His parents are from Boston, so.
Well, that'll be fun to ask him about. Miranda, thank you so much for spending the time. In the show notes, we'll have links to Miranda's website and her Twitter, and also mention of her sponsors. But Miranda, just enjoy the year and congratulations. And also, thanks for coming. I mean, you've been such a wonderful athlete in the sport, and you will continue to be so. And we're really glad to have you.
Thanks so much, PJ. I appreciate that.